We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Ken Pomeroy of KenPom.com. Ken, welcome to the show, and we appreciate your time.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Well, so we had a discussion last week about how gambling being legal in Ohio has compromised some of our brackets. For an overthinker like myself, it's made it even more impossible to get any of these picks right. Do you still, because I can't remember whether you live in a state where gambling is legal or not, but do you still enjoy making out your own brackets?
Well, first of all, I live in Utah where gambling is very much not legal and probably never will be. But it's very close to Nevada, so there are possibilities there. When it comes to filling out a bracket, I actually don't. I try to avoid filling out a bracket. Obviously, when I end up doing various media appearances, I get put on the spot and make picks and things like that. But, my bracket filling out days are kind of behind me. I just want to enjoy the games and not stress out over having Purdue in the Final Four and, be okay with Fairleigh Dickinson winning.
I was going to say, if you are still on the individual pick level, was there a game that made you most wrong so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I thought Purdue was in a fairly easy region. Not that I necessarily like their team makeup. There's, always concerns when you get to the tournament and your team is kind of built around a 7'4", relatively immobile player, and you have a freshman backcourt. Like, those weren't great signs, but their region was pretty soft, so it felt like who knew that they would get tripped up by the 16th seed. Like, kind of took for granted that they'd get by that game, and then the rest of the bracket maybe would have been doable for them to get to the Final Four. So yeah, I think that's number one on my list by far.
So does that mean I get to write you down as Purdue is your biggest disappointment so far this year's tournament?
I mean, I think without a doubt, yeah. I mean, obviously there were a lot of upsets in that first round. The second round, I think, made a little more sense. But, certainly if you're ranking disappointments in that first round, there's no doubt that Purdue is it. I mean, they, some of these other top seeds, they had excuses. Houston had some injury issues and they somehow persevered. Kansas obviously was missing their head coach, and I don't know how much impact that had, but obviously in a very close game against Arkansas, that may have been a factor. But Purdue didn't really seem to have any excuses. They have a program that's on solid footing. Their coach has been in the NCAA tournament a whole bunch of times, and they had a really fantastic regular season, so that one didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Ken Pomeroy of KenPom.com on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. As we assess that Arkansas-Kansas game, at what level in the tournament is it appropriate for a head coach to rip off his shirt and swing it around like a frat boy?
I mean, I think it on some level it depends on the coach. I was actually kind of impressed. I mean, Eric Musselman looks like he's in pretty decent shape, so he didn't completely embarrass himself in that moment. Had it been like Bruce Pearl doing it, I'm not sure it would have been accepted quite as well. But credit for Eric Musselman for diving in there and embracing the moment. It's obviously a huge moment for the program, and never hurts to jump into the crowd and get everybody fired up.
So my only concern, this is not a criticism, Ken, it is a concern, is that the trying to elevate it from here, if you rip your shirt off and whirl it around like a frat boy going into the Sweet 16, what happens if you get to the Final Four? I mean, if he wins the title, lo and behold, is he going to have to get stark-ass naked? These are the kinds of things I worry about, Ken.
I mean, yeah, that's not a great image to put into people's head, but maybe he knew something. I mean, the matchup against UConn is a pretty difficult one, even though UConn's the four seed. They're one of the stronger four seeds that we've ever seen. So maybe he knew how the bracket was going to break down and just decided that this was his moment.
Ken, if you reseeded this tournament, Sweet 16 teams, who is one and who is 16?
Oh, boy. I think, you know, number one is still Alabama. I was really, really impressed with, you know, what they did against Maryland. That was a game where, you know, we talk about there maybe being no dominant team this year, but Alabama looked pretty dominant. Like, Maryland was just completely shut down offensively. And, you know, there was never a point in that game where I was watching and I was like, yeah, I think Maryland still has a chance here. I was just watching to watch just the pure dominance of Alabama. 16, I mean, I think pretty clearly has to be Princeton. Great story to get to the Sweet 16. Had a really friendly matchup against a Missouri team who had one of the worst defenses in the entire field. You know, they're not going to, Princeton's not going to get that kind of cushy matchup against Creighton. Creighton's not going to press Princeton. They will let them play in the half court. They'll bother them on their three-point shots. Creighton has some rim protection. So defensively, it's just going to be a whole different world that Princeton's going to face, and it's going to be a much more uphill battle in that game.
Ken, of those 16 teams, how many are legitimate threats to win the whole thing?
Well, a lot. There is a lot of parity this year, and even though I was really wowed by what Alabama did, they're also a team that's heavily dependent on the three-point shot, and so certainly that's a recipe for getting upset on the wrong night. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you throw Alabama, you throw Houston there. I mentioned Creighton. I mean, even as a sixth seed, like, they're really good. So I put them in the mix. Gonzaga looked pretty strong. UConn, I mentioned, is tough, you know, the tough four seed. Not even throw UCLA in there. I know they have the injury issue with Jalen Clark, and they didn't look super impressive against Northwestern, but they're still getting the job done. And, you know, with Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell, I mean, that duo is pretty tough and obviously battle tested in some deep tournament runs. So yeah, I mean, I think that's the pretty comfortable list. And, you know, I'm not even talking about like Tom Izzo, who, you know, is in a region where you have, you know, a 3, a 4 and a 9 seed to get by to get to the Final Four. So, you know, you could probably throw him in there as well.
Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Of course, the NCAA tournament is now into the Sweet 16 phase. Only 16 teams left. Now, you mentioned Tom Izzo, yet another Sweet 16 appearance by Tom Izzo. Who is, of current coaches, I should say, who is the greatest NCAA tournament coach going right now?
I mean, it's probably him. You know, he doesn't get the higher end talent that he was getting earlier in his career. So he's, you know, he's always battling from kind of these lower seeds, it seems like. But for consistent performance, like, he's right there. You know, I think obviously Gonzaga getting to the Sweet 16. I mean, they, you know, now they're eight Sweet 16s in a row, and really I would say like 9, because in 2020 they would have been a 1 seed, so they probably would have got to the Sweet 16 there. That would make it 9 in a row, which would equal the record in the 64-team era. So, you know, Mark Few is pretty underrated, I think, as a consistent tournament coach. Doesn't have the national title, but, you know, while Tom Izzo does have a national title, it's been almost a quarter century since he got one. So, you know, those two coaches are on pretty similar footing there. So, to me, it's you know, definitely a battle between those two for best tournament coach at this point.
Ken, I did see a tweet about Gonzaga and how they do against their own seeding. So can you explain what Gonzaga's been able to do under Mark Few against their own seeding? And if you have any prevailing hypotheses why they can be the way they are, I'd like to hear that as well.
Well, I mean, I tweeted out yesterday, you know, the guy to the Sweet 16 is a 3 seed. You know, a 3 seed normally averages less than 2 wins in NCAA tournament. So just by virtue of getting 2 wins, they've overperformed their seed, and they have done that 12 of the last 15 years. If you give them 2020, which I was pretty generous, but even if you don't, it's 11 out of 14. And so you know, there are other coaches that can probably have a similar record to that, but that's a pretty good run. Obviously they have not, you know, won the national title, and so people will rag on them for that. But the consistency is very impressive. And how do they do it? I mean, I, you know, I will say one underrated aspect of playing in the WCC is that you do not get beat up coming into the tournament. Like, you can kind of plan your February and March pretty leisurely. You know, now that the guys are taking nights off, but you don't have to run guys out there 35 minutes a game to win your conference. Guys are going to get plenty of rest. We see that with Gonzaga. We see that with Houston to some extent. Like, their two long runs in the last two NCAA tournaments, I think, have been aided by the fact that they play in a weaker conference. And so people kind of say, you know, hey, they aren't tested when they get to the NCAA tournament. But really, the results show you that you don't necessarily need to be tested to play well. And furthermore, it might even be a benefit. I mean, I'm not saying it is, but that is a theory that I'm starting to be attracted to, because the results seem to be lining up with that.
Ken, Miami is in the Sweet 16. Jim Larrañaga made some waves last week by saying he wants 96 tournament teams. How do you feel about that idea?
I don't really like the idea of 96 tournament teams. However, I am one of the few that does think we should be expanding the NCAA tournament. My personal opinion is we should go to 80 teams. So we're just adding 12 more. I think it has, first of all, it has benefits for mid-majors. You'd sneak a few more mid-majors into the tournament. Yes, you would sneak in a few more mediocre power conference teams. That's the deal that we make in doing that. But I think it would be worth it. I'd also have a clause in there where if you win a game in the conference tournament, your conference gets like an automatic at-large bid the following year. So like Princeton winning for the Ivy League this year would not have just been a cool story for Princeton, but it would have guaranteed that next season the Ivy League's tournament champion would get in, and they would get an extra team, you know, the regular season champion or somebody else would also make the tournament. So you would guarantee that these, you know, 12 additional teams, you'd get, you know, three or four more mid-majors in that group. That would be a very palatable solution to me, and it would allow the mid-majors to still have a path, which they're constantly getting squeezed out now. You know, the power conferences are expanding. There are fewer paths for mid-majors to get at-large bids. So that is my primary motivation in expanding the tournament.
Ken, this is the oldest tournament recorded. Obviously, the extra COVID year has impacted that. Do you think that having older tournaments, meaning you know, a higher age range for tournaments, do you think that's a good thing for college basketball?
I do. I mean, we're in this era now. Obviously, we've been in the one-and-done era for a while, but, you know, anymore, I mean, the top 40 or 50 freshmen are leaving, or not top 40 or 50 freshmen, the top 40 or 50 players are leaving to go to the NBA draft every year. And so there is a bit of a talent drain in college basketball, and certainly that's being aided by the influence of G League Ignite and Overtime Elite and some of these other professional options that are just taking the best high school players out before they even get to college. So to me, the COVID years really helped college basketball. They retained some of this marginal talent. You know, I haven't mentioned guys like Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell. You know, those are guys that are not NBA players that have the option to stick around for 5 years. And we're seeing more of those players stick around. Fairleigh Dickinson themselves, that 2 5-year guys, that kind of allowed them to pull off the upset. So I love the idea of having older players. I think it's made the game better. It's increased parity, and it's made the tournament more fun. And my proposal is that hopefully we can find a way to keep that going. You know, eventually the COVID year obviously will go away, but I would love for the NCAA to just maintain 5-year eligibility and make it a permanent policy.
Ken, great stuff, buddy. I know this is your high peak times here for not just radio hits, but everything you do. So we appreciate you making time for us, and hope you enjoy the rest of the tournament, buddy. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Ken was great. I just don't understand the need to extend the tournament. Like, I don't understand, like, I don't understand how it enriches the experience, right? Like in college football, four teams isn't enough. Four teams is good, but I think if you extend it to six teams, eight teams, 12 teams, all of a sudden I do think there's more room for drama. I think we've reached the point with college basketball. Now, if you said it's actually going to be good for college basketball because it's going to help some of these programs survive, like the program Dustin and I bag on all the time, St. Francis Brooklyn, they cut all athletic programs today. And they were one of the worst funded college basketball programs in the country for Division I.
okay, well, all of a sudden, I can play fair on that. If putting 96 teams in the tournament, that adds more money to the game, it adds more money to some of these mid-level programs, you know what? I can get on board with it. But let's be transparent about that. Well, it's going to make for a better tournament. No, it probably isn't. It's going to be the same kind of tournament. Well, it's going to add 96 teams. You add another round. Okay. Can we have it run instead of 2 days? Can we have it run from like Wednesday all the way till through the weekend? I just want to be honest about why we would add more teams to college basketball tournament. I don't think 80 teams all of a sudden is going to be a better tournament. If anything, I think it's going to be a harder path for, you know, rightful champions to go ahead and make it to the end game, make it to the Final Four, make it to the Elite Eight to have a realistic chance to win a championship. Great stuff with Ken Pom. We'll circle back on that later in today's show, but we do have to get to the spring training report brought to you by Golf Tech. Josh Naylor just hit a home run into the ozone. It was a beautiful home run. I'd also like to point out Hunter Gaddis is pitching for the Guardians today. You just look at somebody and just know who they are. That is a big human being. He's about like, I don't know how big. I was going to say he's like 6 foot six. He looks 6 foot six. He also looks like in his off time, he just follows Shinedown around on tour. Or like Five Finger Death Punch. By the way, great bands, if you can see them. They're better live. I don't even know about that. Anyway, which one's this? Shinedown? Okay. God, if Hunter Gaddis hears this, he's going to lose his mind. Start chucking at the bald guys' heads. Sorry, dudes. When I hear the down, I lose my mind a little bit.
The down?
Yeah, right? I was listening to this guy, Sledge, on the Active Rock station the other day, and he played some down, and I just lost my mind. They all have stupid names. That's the bit. So I was actually reading Marla Ridenour's piece for Cleveland Magazine about one of the biggest questions facing the Guardians that I don't think any of us have talked about nearly enough. And it's Oscar Gonzalez. I think we've taken for granted to some degree what a out of left field, an amazing story Oscar Gonzalez was. There's a kid who was kind of a fringy prospect heading into last year. You can make an argument that he was the fourth most important offensive player in the final 90 games of last year. And I'll hear that he was as important as Oscar Jimenez if you want to make that call. But I think, you know, considering his approach, he is an aggressive guy. He is somebody that chases pitches. I think there are a lot of people banking that Oscar Gonzalez is just going to be great again this year. I'm not. And I think he's one of the guys that I'm most curious about. And I think this is a big week for him because he has not hit the ball well in spring training. That's not something to panic about. But he's 4-for-26 in the spring, and he's got 4 singles. And if Oscar Gonzalez can carry the momentum of last year and develop into a really good major league player, right, 20 to 25 home runs, hit 270, 280, and play good defense out in right field. If he can do that, that would be amazing. Right? That maybe is what he profiles as. If he can't, or if he struggles this year, as sophomore players tend to do in baseball, all of a sudden the offense becomes a work in progress. And specifically the outfield. Because like if Oscar can hit and Stephen Kwan can hit, if both of those guys can push off a sophomore slump, then you can really get creative in center field and just kind of play the hot hand between Miles Straw and Will Brennan. Straw's going to get the first swing at it, but he shouldn't have the kind of leeway he had last year where I don't think he was benched or I don't think he was kind of, pushed off by younger players until like early August. The Guardians don't have that kind of runway with their center fielder specifically this year. But it's all for naught if Oscar Gonzalez can't keep some of that momentum or at least just be a good baseball player. And the reason why I said that this year or this week is such an important week for Oscar Gonzalez is, and I think Carl Willis kind of said this too, when he was talking about the pitchers and some of the numbers struggles that these guys have had in spring training, this is kind of the week where all of a sudden guys start to put it together and you're able to tell, all right, this guy's ready, this guy isn't, he might need more seasoning. And I think we've all assumed that Oscar's going to break camp with the 26-man roster. I wouldn't assume that just yet. I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. I'm pretty sure he's cemented into the right field spot. But I think of all the guys that you could see maybe get a little extra seasoning in the minor leagues early in the season, it's Oscar. That is if the Guardians feel like, all right, this is more than just he's working through the stuff in spring. Because the one thing, like Stephen Kwan, his style fits what the Guardians want to do. Oscar really doesn't. Whether it's the aggressiveness, whether it's chasing pitches, whether it's, you know, his ability to make consistent contact, he's kind of the one guy on the roster that doesn't necessarily profile as what they like as hitters. They like patient. They like guys that are selectively aggressive. I've heard Tito say that before as well. And guys who pitch to or who make great contact all the time. That is your spring training report brought to you by Golf Tech.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.